Hey everyone, it's Colin. How's it going? So I've been thinking quite a bit lately about the nature of how we interact with our computers, specifically the software. I know we've talked about hardware and how those, you know, bits and pieces have changed over the years and sometimes introduced just kind of mind-blowing improvements to our productivity, but hardware, of course, is only part of the story. The software is just as important, and sometimes, if not more so. And what really got me thinking about this is one particular event that's kind of fresh around the time that I'm recording this, and it involves the free and open source piece of software called Audacity. You've probably heard something about what's going on here. So I won't go too in-depth into the nitty-gritty of the story, but basically the rights to Audacity were purchased by a company called Muse Group, and they've produced other music and audio, you know, related software in the past. And they promised that they would continue making Audacity open source and free to use. And, you know, they basically gave lip service to the whole thing about, look, we're not going to change anything. We're just being in charge of this now instead of it being, you know, a separate group of people. Now you've got kind of a company with experienced developers behind it, and they can help make the program better and yada, 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 whatever. So some amount of time goes on and they start making some announced changes to Audacity, not necessarily in terms of its functionality, but rather in that it's now going to start collecting telemetry data. And that's programmer speak for somewhat personally identifiable information about the users who run the program. If you've been paying attention to all of the privacy considerations surrounding things like Windows 10 and the upcoming Windows 11, you've probably heard the term telemetry used when it comes to software before. And it can take many forms and comprise different bits and pieces of data, but oftentimes it's some sort of generated machine ID number. It's oftentimes also an IP address, your public IP, your hardware specifications, you know, what CPU you have, how much RAM you have, stuff like that, what operating system you're running. If, you know, the telemetry isn't about the operating system itself, but for an application, you know, it can help the software developers figure out if there is a compatibility problem, say, with a particular function in the application and a specific OS version and build and that sort of thing. And oftentimes, also, that telemetry data can include how long you use the program or what functions you use or how frequently you use those functions, that sort of stuff. And this is all the kind of telemetry data that Audacity's creators or owners, current owners and, you know, current developers announced not long ago that they were going to start collecting. So basically Audacity, even though it was free open source software, whenever you launch it, it would phone home. And by default, this telemetry functionality would be turned on. So that means you would have to opt out of it. And then, you know, some time goes past and, you know, that particular part of the story happened, I believe, a few months ago, and there was a little bit of an uproar, but, you know, the community that was really involved in Audacity, kind of the hardcore users or the hardcore open source, you know, champions, you know, they realized, okay, well, you know, you can opt out, fine, it's, you know, we'll get over it, whatever. But then there some more changes were made. And now there's kind of a blanket statement in there about, well, you know, they can collect other data as necessary for, you know, complying with law enforcement purposes. And I've read some articles that basically say that's pretty boilerplate text. It's not like Audacity is going to be able to scrape the contents of your hard drive and upload all of your files, you know, to some nefarious cloud server out there where Muse Group is going to immediately turn around and give it to the FBI or whatever police force is in your country. I mean, that would be quite a stretch. And I think a lot of modern operating systems have built-in protections even to prevent that sort of thing, app sandboxing and all that kind of stuff. So you know, from a technical perspective, it's not too much to worry about, but that language scares people. And so that was the latest thing where we've seen this big push amongst, I'm going to say it's a vocal minority of people now claiming that Audacity is spyware and it's bad and you should uninstall it completely and that sort of thing. And to wrap this up, basically, as I'm recording this, none of those changes have actually even been put into effect. They were announced for a future revision of Audacity that hasn't been released yet. And so there's still lots that can be subject to change. And already Muse Group has, you know, made some changes where they said, okay, so the telemetry stuff is now opt-in instead of opt-out, and you know, trying to kind of PR-wise deal with this backlash. But this whole thing and this passionate response from the diehard Audacity community has really gotten me thinking more about the nature of how we interact with our computers at that software level. I mean, these are people who arguably kind of live and die by this program. They haven't found anything else or better that meets their needs for various reasons. And so they have a vested interest in keeping that program working the way they want it to work, to the point where I think there is a little bit of fanboy or fangirlism going on there, you know, and everyone's always kind of afraid of change and they don't want to see things move away from the way they've always been, especially if people have been very comfortable with the way that those programs, you know, have always worked and everything. I'm sure there is a not insignificant number of Audacity users who absolutely love the fact that it's free and open source and, you know, it's something that they can be proud of or brag about or whatever. And elitism kind of within, you know, computing communities is nothing new. And it's very frustrating. But, you know, and I don't mean to be ragging on, you know, the hardcore Audacity users at all, because you know what? All of this sort of thing has happened with lots of other programs as well. And I guess that's kind of what I want to get into is, you know, we look at hardware as being this kind of ephemeral thing, right? Like we know new hardware is coming because new hardware is always coming. And so even when we get a new computer or a new device, we know it's only going to be valid for so long, right? We know, okay, well, you know, I'll get maybe 3, 4, 5 years of use out of this computer, and then it'll be time for something else. And even if we don't necessarily have that in the front of our mind, we know it's coming, right? Like my own iMac, I've got, you know, my 2017 27-inch iMac. I paid a lot of money for it back in 2017, but even back in 2017, I knew I'd probably get, you know, maybe 5 years worth of use out of it. And I'm already starting to look at replacing it because, sad to say, it's starting to fall behind in terms of fulfilling my needs, specifically for editing video. So I am absolutely chomping at the bit to get a new Apple Silicon-based large screen iMac that, as of this recording, Apple hasn't announced yet. Hopefully it's coming within a few months and I'm saving money to be able to buy that thing because it ain't going to be cheap either. Right? So, I mean, it's just this thing, the march of progress. We know on the hardware side, it's just going to happen. And so when it's time to get a new computer, whether it's for our own personal use or for work or whatever, we accept that. And some people are easier, you know, to accept that than others, right? Some people get new devices all the time. They want to stay on the cutting edge. They go out and buy a new laptop every year, every 2 years, just because they want the latest and greatest features and the best performance and the best graphics and all that kind of stuff. Other people, they tend to cling to their older devices because they're really happy with the way they work. And maybe there isn't anything that's, you know, equivalent to it directly brand new in the marketplace. You know, I know amongst like the ThinkPad community, there are people who purposefully rock older devices just because they like the ability to upgrade the parts, or maybe they like the way the keyboard feels, or, you know, the compatibility with their particular Linux flavor or whatever. But even then, they still recognize and understand the fact eventually that hardware will die and it'll be time to move on to something else. I don't feel like that's necessarily the same thing with software, at least not in terms of like this, the package itself. What I mean by that is, I think we often are all, you know, looking forward to, or at least not resistant to, updates to our programs, especially if they add features or fix stability problems or whatever, you know, like if you're diehard into the Adobe ecosystem, you probably look forward to the next update to Photoshop because it'll add cool new features that can make your productivity get better or make jobs get easier or, you know, whatever. But what I do find interesting is it's really hard for people to switch to a completely different package, right? If you're diehard into Adobe, you probably wouldn't even think about switching to something else. If you're diehard into Linux, you probably wouldn't even be all that eager to try out a different distribution because you found what works and you are sticking with it, right? If you're a diehard Windows user, I know there are even some diehard Windows 10 users that are going to avoid Windows 11 just because they think Windows 11 kind of changes too much. And if Windows 11 was, you know, more like Windows 7, that would actually make them happier. They'd be willing to switch. But, you know, we're as eager to change as we can be with hardware. I feel like it's the complete opposite with software. And I've tried myself to keep from falling into that mindset. Like I used to be years ago, one of those diehard Adobe users, but then Creative Cloud came along and they started charging, you know, per month for a subscription to the software instead of before where I could just every few years pay a few hundred bucks and buy the complete package. Well, the value just wasn't there for me. I didn't like the fact that I was getting nickeled and dimed continuously for this software that I used to be able to just purchase and own. And if I wanted to skip a major version of Creative Suite when it was on that purchase model, I could, right? I could just extend the use of the previous model or the previous version of that software and, you know, no big deal. There was no compelling need to upgrade or rather spend the money right away if I was happy with the way the software worked. But I got to that point where I'm like, you know what? I don't want to pay for Creative Cloud. I don't use the software that much. This was prior to really me starting YouTube. So I didn't have any sort of existing ongoing workflow that relied on that software at the time. So I made the conscious effort to switch. I decided, you know what? I want to cut Adobe out of my life if I can, and go with more independent software from smaller developers that maybe are a little bit more eager to fill in that gap or can do almost the same thing, if not the same thing, for far less money. And so far, I've been fairly successful, right? As a replacement for Photoshop, I ended up switching actually to two different programs. I started with Pixelmator, which is Mac only, and that one worked really well as kind of like a Photoshop Express. If you remember Photoshop Express, I think that's what it was called from years ago. That worked as kind of an equivalent to that. It doesn't have all the same features, but it's got a lot of them. And I actually still use Pixelmator pretty often these days, mostly for video thumbnails, because it makes adding the text and all that pretty quick and easy. It's a fairly lightweight program. It doesn't take forever to launch. And it's just really nice and quick to work with. The other program for heavier duty photo editing and dealing with like HDR photos and RAW photos and all that kind of stuff is Affinity Photo. And that's an amazing program. If you want to get away from Photoshop, I can highly recommend Affinity Photo because it's cross-platform at this point. And I'd like to say it probably does 95% of what Photoshop does, and you can often get it on sale for like $20, single purchase. So no subscription or anything like that. And I really like that I made that switch. It was worth it to me. Yes, the tool sets are a little bit different, but once I wrap my head around the changes, it's been good, especially with another similar transition that I made from Adobe Illustrator over to Affinity Design, which is another vector graphics kind of application. And I've been doing that. I use that not as frequently, just because I don't have much of a need for that kind of stuff. But whenever I've done a new logo for my channel or any other kind of vector graphics type of work, I use Affinity Design. And honestly, I think it's easier than Illustrator. So that's another one that costs like $20 if you can pick it up on sale. Otherwise, normally it's $40 or $50, still not terribly expensive. And, you know, I've been eager to make that change, and I try to keep an open mind, and so far it's worked really well. But sad to say, I'm actually finding myself kind of falling into the same trap again, just outside the Adobe ecosystem. Here's a great example. Pixelmator, a couple of years ago, launched an additional or separate version called Pixelmator Pro. It wasn't necessarily meant to immediately replace the original Pixelmator, which they now call Pixelmator Classic, but be kind of like the next step up. They did kind of make it clear that eventually it would replace Pixelmator Classic, and Pixelmator Pro also has like iPad versions and all that kind of stuff available, so it's not just a Mac desktop app. And I picked up a copy of it because it seemed like, you know what, the writing is eventually going to be on the wall. I should probably, you know, get with it and move on. And I figured, okay, it would just be like the original Pixelmator, but more advanced features and that sort of thing. Turns out it's a completely different UI. It works completely different than the original Pixelmator, and I hate it. I hate it. I hate it so much that I opened up a feature request with Pixelmator asking them, look, if you guys are going to kill off Pixelmator Classic, could you at least add some sort of tool compatibility mode to Pixelmator Pro where I can go into the preferences and change Pro, at least its tool palettes and everything, to work the same way that they did on Pixelmator Classic. Just because they are so different and a lot of the functionality that I used in Classic either got moved or obscured in such a weird way that it significantly slows me down. And Pixelmator has made it clear that Classic will not be getting a native Apple Silicon version. It works under Rosetta. Like, I've tried it on my Apple Silicon MacBook Pro, and it kind of works, but there are some bugs. And it's pretty clear those bugs on Apple Silicon are not ones that are going to get fixed. So I'm starting to run up against the end of the line with Classic. And so I'm getting stuck here, and it's getting stuck in a problem of my own design. Like, I could just move over to Affinity Photo or, expand my workflow and do thumbnails in Affinity Design because it's great at vector stuff. So text in the backgrounds and all that kind of stuff would work well. The problem is it's no longer a one-stop shop, right? I have to, what they call round trip, these files from one program to another and back again and all this kind of stuff. And that slows me down. And I'm a big proponent of always trying to find tools that enhance your productivity. The one thing that I've learned in my professional career is that it's always worth it to spend money on stuff that saves you time. So, you know, I'm stuck. I've spent money on these programs and pieces of software that can save me time, but now the programs are changing or being deprecated, and I'm getting stuck in that position again. So now I've got to go out and try and find another alternative to like Pixelmator Classic that works in that same fashion. But I'm finding myself kind of resistant. I'm kind of finding myself in the same position, maybe like the hardcore Audacity people are, where, you know, Audacity, you know, the people behind it, the developers and, you know, now the owners, they're making changes. And this is a tool that you maybe rely on as part of your workflow. And suddenly those changes are no longer acceptable to you. So I know exactly how the diehard Audacity community feels about these changes, even though there's nothing really functional that's changing about Audacity. Actually, I wish there were some functional changes being made to it, specifically its 30-year-old looking UI. But you know what I mean? Like, it's really frustrating to be trying to actively not tie yourself to a piece of software, but arguably that's the thing that you really get sucked into the most. I mean, just look at the OS battles. I mean, they've raged for decades, Mac versus Windows, and now you've got Linux entering the fray. And even within the Linux community, you've got just endless arguments. I never try to genuinely ask people, like, what's the best Linux distro? Because there is no answer to that question. You ask that of anybody, and you will get, basically, everyone will answer in a different way. You will never get a consensus. You will never get anyone that can make a compelling argument as to why theirs is better, because there's give and take amongst all the different distributions. And even just the classic Windows versus Mac battle, like, there is no correct answer. They're all just tools in a way, and you have to find the one that best fits for you. And trying to get advice from people about what may be the best fit for you is really difficult, because it's hard to ask, like, on the internet and have people understand exactly what your use case is and your workflow and what you need, you know, in order to do your job, what kind of features and all that you're looking at. You can try and explain that kind of stuff until you're blue in the face, but they will still respond with, well, they are going to recommend what they use to you, because they just, that's the tribe that they're in, right? It all comes back to tribalism in some ways. So, you know, I'm totally understanding the position that the Audacity people are in, and I would encourage them to try and find another piece of software that would meet their needs if they really don't like the direction that the program is heading, because sad to say, you know, the, you know, Muse Group company has not kind of put their best foot forward. Like, they buy the project and then in relatively short order start announcing changes like that don't really bode well for the community. I mean, they don't give the company a whole lot of credibility as to being serious about, you know, upholding the values that the user community of Audacity, you know, really, really clings to. And so I get it, but at the same time, I also totally get getting stuck into a program and not having the time or not wanting to learn something else. And it's just, it's a very weird kind of conundrum to get stuck in. Software is one of these things where I feel like it exists in a very black or white kind of state. There's, I don't think, a whole ton of gray area to programs that are really good and really well thought out and meet the needs of the people who use them perfectly and have companies behind them that support them well and value their customers and that sort of thing, versus programs that aren't the best, but they fill a niche role and people kind of begrudgingly have to use them. And I feel like, you know, I think a lot of people, not everybody, of course, a lot of people feel like Adobe has kind of ended up in that camp. And there's lots of other ones, you know, Microsoft Office. I kind of hate Microsoft Office, but everyone still uses it just because it's the default, and even Windows to that extent too. Like, I don't think anyone loves Windows, but they like Windows more than they do the Mac or Linux or whatever. So, you know, I'm curious as to what your thoughts are. Are there any particular programs that you feel like you're kind of stuck with that for whatever reason has proven really difficult, if not impossible, for you to get out from using? Or have you been able to somehow break out of that mindset and realize that by changing your workflow or just spending the time to learn a different feature set or a different UI or whatever has ended up being worth it? I'm curious as to not just how frequent of a problem this is. I mean, maybe there are more kind of software nomads, for lack of a better term, out there than I think. You know, maybe there are people who are constantly changing which Linux distro they run if they're, you know, hardcore into the Linux ecosystem, or they constantly, you know, switch back and forth between other software tools that may or may not meet their needs at the time. Or are there people who just get, you know, a new computer, and every time they get a new computer, they just set it up exactly like the previous one? Let me know what your thoughts are. As always, thanks for listening.